the President of the United States.
We have allowed so many weasels to be elected.
So wherever and whenever I can take steps without legislation, that's what I'm going to do.
Those weasels who deny American exceptionalism.
I believe in American exceptionalism.
Those weasels who are saying to our children in their schools that we need to conform, that we need to bow down to those foreign interests. They're saying to you and I that America is no longer the great shining light upon the hill. Let us send this message. No, no, no. We will not bow down. We will not conform. And we will not go away.
Now on KLZ, Freedom 560 with your host, Ken Clark.
Good afternoon, Colorado. This is Ted Harvey, former state senator from Douglas County, filling in for Ken Clark this afternoon on this very bizarre, dreary, Seattle-like day or week or month. And honored to be here sitting in for Ken. And I've got with me two of my dear friends, Chris Hulbert, state senator from Douglas County, who succeeded me, and Randy Baumgartner, the great one from northeastern or northwestern Colorado. Guys, thanks for being here. This was the last week of the legislative session, and I wanted to have the opportunity to chat with you guys about your thoughts about how the dirty, rotten, stinking Democrats handled themselves in the Senate, in the minority, and how they handled themselves in the majority in the House, but also what a difference it makes to be in the majority for the Republicans in the Senate for the first time in a decade, and your thoughts. You both have been down there a long time. Randy, you've been down there longer than Chris has. Why don't you give your perspective of real quick about the whole session in general, but then we can go in further details as we go along today.
The whole session in general, temper tantrums, frowning faces, just, and times you'd think they were almost crying. They had been in the majority for a long time. They were used to driving that bus, and even in the committees, they had not lost that, wait a minute, I'm in the minority, I'm not in the majority anymore, I want to control this committee. And a lot of times they found that it really didn't work that way. And I think that toward the end of the session, they finally begin to get it.
They saw their bills die in State Affairs Committee in a way that they'd never seen it before.
Yes. And that was one of the things that you could just see, when, especially on the floor, when the votes were 18-17. You know, last year it was 18-17 over and over and over again.
The other way,
exactly. And you could just see, the facial expressions. They were really upset. Some of them really got mad. They get red faced. There was one in particular sitting in the front row, right there in the corner
red
seat.
Hair.
Red hair. Yeah, you could just see from time to time she'd just be seething mad. But you know, that's the way it happened. And we weren't mean. We had the opportunity to be vindictive and mean, and we weren't. I think we played it pretty even all the way through. So I don't know if you want to talk about the very last day.
Well, we'll get into that.
Okay.
We'll get into that. I want to bring freshman Chris Hulbert in, freshman year in the state Senate. Chris, what did you think about your freshman year in the Senate and being the majority in the Senate?
Well, it was similar to coming into the House in 2011. Ray Scott and I joked that apparently if we want to win a majority in the legislature, he and I just run together in the same year and we'll get at least a one-vote majority in the chamber. But it is different than 2011 because we've been there, and credit to you, Senator, and my best friend. The reality of serving in the Senate is that there's half the number of members. The math isn't exactly that. But the workload is tremendous, and it's significantly more than being in the House. And being in the majority requires even more work. It was exhausting. So grateful to the voters of Colorado giving us a chance to lead and to be able to stop bad bills, but also the opportunity to work together. We found some opportunities to do that, there are some good folks on the other side of the aisle, and they've got some good ideas. But as Randy had indicated, it's nice to be able to have that majority and stop a bad bill. And it took them a while to get used to that. So thank you.
You know, so many Americans out there don't realize how important the majority is.
Yeah.
And one vote, majority, whether it's one vote or whether it's five votes, being in the majority makes all the difference in the world in being able to get your agenda passed or killing their bad agenda. Talk about how some of the things that passed through the Senate this year, which were great things for Colorado that would have moved Colorado forward and improved our economy and improved the lives of the families of Colorado, that the Democrats just killed outright in committee because they had the majority in the House. Randy, you want to talk about one of those?
Well, I don't know where to start.
Randy and I were together on the mag ban bill, and of course
that was your bill, right, Chris?
That was my bill. Worked really hard to get all 18 Republicans.
What
three
was the mag ban bill for those that
the 2013 law that Representative Fields passed the bill into law that limited us to 15 rounds, and that certainly has created a lot of controversy, a lot of discussion. Mr. Caldera and Mr. Brown have gone toe-to-toe on that, and I think for those of us in the legislature, it was painful to watch and listen to that conversation go on as we had this bill that had all 18 senators, Republican senators, plus three Democrats, plus a Democrat in the House, and we passed that through with bipartisan support in the Senate. Move it over
Who was the Democrat in the House?
Ed Vigil. Yeah,
Ed Vigil.
Yeah, from Alamosa. He voted no on the bill in 2013, and you know I understand the folks out there who are calling for the 30-round compromise, but it was really challenging as that went through. We had this bipartisan support, and people say, well, everybody knew it was going to die in House State Affairs, but that just totally forgets or overlooks the reality that those three Democrats in the Senate, Sherry John, Kerry Donovan, mm-hmm. and Leroy Garcia,
right.
they all took heavy criticism for having their name on the bill, but they did it because they believed it was right.
Right.
And
so what are the numbers in the House?
Is it 34-31,
I believe. Democrat, Republican.
Mm-hmm. 34-31. So the Democrats, if you were to get the bill out of the House, you'd have to get 33, right? So you'd have to swing three votes to get
it out of the Senate
to get it through the House.
Just two,
yeah,
two votes,
two
but and then you'd have to get it out of committee.
That's right,
and that seems to be where the problem is because
the Speaker of the House is going to send that bill to a committee that she thinks will do her bidding, right?
Right.
And what committee is that?
Usually State Affairs.
Usually. But, on another bill, we had one on the K-12 policy, opt-out. And the moms out there were so active this year in being concerned about Common Core and PARC and all this policy. And I got a text one day and said, you should go up and talk to Senator Morgan Carroll. Not something I would normally get a text on. And I walked up to the minority leader's office and asked if she was available. I walked in, had a conversation. And turns out she was interested in being a sponsor of the opt-out bill. So Senator Nancy Todd and I, a Democrat, we brought that bill. And we had Majority Leader Sheffel and the Minority Leader Carroll. And we had Senator Tim Neville. And we had Senator Mike Merrifield. And it's just fascinating to watch, you know, how we would bring that bipartisan support, and then the House would just kill it, which they did.
And killed it in what committee that time?
That one was House Education.
House Education.
With Republicans voting against and Democrats voting against, and the same thing on the support side, but I think it lost by one vote in the House. Just fascinating.
In the committee? Died by one vote,
yep,
in the committee?
I believe that was right. I wasn't there for the vote, but kind of went in and out, but it did lose. So.
Speaks to how powerful the majority is, though.
Yes,
it does.
Yep.
If you don't want it through, it will. Randy, we got about 20 seconds. Do you want to get started? Or
Why don't we just talk about how great it is to be in the majority for the next 15 seconds? And I don't know.
I can tell you, I was in the legislature for 13 years, and 10 of those years I was in the minority, and that was hell. And to watch you guys being in the majority this year and being able to stop some of the crap that was coming out of the House and being able to be leaders was huge. But we do have to come up against a break. We'd love to have you guys call in. If you want to call in, please do so. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back with Ted Harvey, Chris Hulbert, and Randy Baumgartner. Thanks. Good afternoon, Colorado. This is Ted Harvey, former state senator from Douglas County, Colorado. I'm here with my successor, Douglas County Senator from Douglas County, Colorado, Chris Hulbert, and the great one, Randy Baumgartner. And he's a state senator from northwestern Colorado. And we were just talking about the legislative session that just wrapped up on Wednesday and what a difference it makes to have the Republicans, the adults, in control in the state Senate for the first time in 10 years, and what a difference that makes. And I wanted to run over to Randy here, who was one of the sponsors of a interesting proposal to try to fix some of the roads across the state of Colorado from north, south, east, and west, every corner of the state. That it was an important bill to get Colorado's roads fixed, and Randy was the driving force behind that. Thought he had the governor and the Department of Transportation supporting him, and all of a sudden that idea was thrown to the side, out the window, if you will. Randy, tell us about that and what you were trying to do and what happened and what we're going to try to do in the future to get this bill back through the process.
Well, thanks, Ted. The future is uncertain on how this is going to move forward. I know there's still some talk out there about if we want to bring this back or not, take another look at it.
Explain what we were trying to do.
I was going to get there. What the bill did was, back in 1999, there was what's known as trans bonds. It's Transportation Review Anticipation Notes. And that bonded 50% of the federal tax money that came to the state to fund highway projects that built T-Rex. When they did
this, it's already in place, currently in place.
Currently in place, and will not be paid off till 2016. All we wanted to do was extend those notes out for another 20 years with the same amount of percentage coming from the Department of Transportation, 14%, $170 million, and bond against that for the next 20 years to fix 58 projects in the state of Colorado, which would have been I-70 West, Highway 125 North, or Highway, not Highway 125, but I-25 North, but just not those. It was all over the state. Jobs would have brought jobs in, put people to work, but it was highway projects that would have touched every corner of the state. Highway 550, 287.
Hey, Randy, you're chair of Senate Transportation, is that correct?
That's correct.
One of the things that we deal with, and Ted, I know you've heard this in your years in the legislature, but people get so frustrated, you know, no new taxes, and we need, you know, fix our roads and bridges. How much of the general fund goes to fixing roads and bridges?
None.
How much?
That was zero.
Zero.
Zero. Yeah. And that was one of the things, you know, the first meeting we had with the, not the governor, but his staff and the new Department of Transportation director, when I tried to explain what we were doing here, and it would have been brought in $3.5 billion worth
of... Not in taxes.
Ooh,
no.
No new taxes. It would have just been... And a lot of people don't understand how bonding works.
Right.
The bond buyer, the person who holds the bond, is on the hook for that if the money doesn't come in. And they understand that. It's their money. They're willing to
but
get out there.
But it's a pretty good... safe bet, because the revenue stream coming from the federal government to fund those bonds.
And that's federal gas tax?
Federal gas tax.
That gas tax is going to be in place. Those funds are going to come back. You're pretty safe to invest in those bonds. They're pretty highly rated bonds.
They are very highly rated bonds. And one of the things that is very evident. The federal government has never cut transportation funding, ever.
Never?
Never.
Ever.
Ever. So, you know, it was a really safe bet. But the new director of Department of Transportation, when we had this first meeting, he goes, golly, he pounded the table and he said, sign me. I did that for effect, Chris.
If you hear the pounding out there, Randy's pounding on the table. So he said, welcome to radio.
And I have a face for that. He said, sign me up. And a week later, he's going, oh, my gosh, we can't do this.
What was his explanation
for
why he couldn't do it?
Well, not sure that the funds would be there to do that. And actually, you know, they're going to take over half of the revenue that they have, half their savings, and put it on that bridge replacement out there.
Currently.
Yes.
That's their current plan.
That's their
so they don't have
plan.
Any additional
they have no
money.
Plan. They have no plan. And in committee, when I asked the liaison for Department of Transportation, I said, so if we don't do this now, interest rates are the lowest they've been in years at less than 4%, which give us more money to bond against to bring back into the state for those projects. So I said, so if this bill doesn't pass, what's going to happen? And he says, well, we'll bond against that $170 million when it starts coming back to the Department of Transportation. I said, well, why don't we do it now?
When rates are low.
Well, rates are low.
So how? Tell me how this would have been handled legally. Would it have been a referendum to go to the voters and ask them to be able to bond?
It was. It was a referendum. The voters of the state of Colorado would have had, went to the ballot, and they would have voted whether we wanted to fix these highways or not. And I think the people
because under Tabor and other areas in the Constitution, it requires if you are going to go into debt that you have to go to the voters and ask them for permission and tell them exactly what you're going to spend the money on.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
And that's what we did with T-Rex.
Exactly. And that's what it would. All those projects would have been listed. What the money. And that was one of the things. This money would have went to specific projects. There was no way to move that around. And they didn't like that because
they didn't like the projects?
Well, it wasn't that they didn't like the projects. They didn't like that money being locked in to certain projects. That way they couldn't
They wanted to control
to move the money around. That's why we wrote it the way we did, to make sure that the money went for those projects to where it couldn't be moved around. It couldn't
so
be
So it got out of the Senate?
It did. Got out of the Senate. Went to the House. We thought that we had, and it went to State Affairs.
Transportation.
Not transportation. Now, which
a transportation which, bill didn't go to transportation.
No. Well, that yeah, they it did. You know, it went to transportation in the Senate, and that's where it should have went to in the House, but they didn't. They assigned it to State Affairs, and we actually thought
they one person assigned it.
Yeah, the Speaker,
the Democrat Speaker of the House, assigned it to her kill committee.
She did. But we thought we had a Democrat in that kill committee that had been talking like, yeah, I might be able to support this, and then he didn't. So it died. It died in the in that committee. And so now we're looking at.
That's infuriating to me. That is infuriating to me. The Democrats have come up with nothing other than raise taxes, which they did under the Ritter administration, to raise taxes on
the
registration
faster,
fees yeah. and late fees and
faster and
the faster money.
Right. That's
raising taxes without going to a vote of the people.
And then the penalties, which we've heard so much about. People hate this. If I don't get my plates on time, I'm taxed $25 or fined. $25 a month up to $100.
Up to $100.
Yeah.
And so they were more than willing to go out there and tax the voters to bring in more money and spend on whatever they wanted to spend it on. And they changed the whole transportation formula, the Senate Bill 1 formula, so that money wouldn't go into transportation right now.
Right.
We have zero money going in. Right. You finally come up with an idea that was an idea that Republican Governor Bill Owens did with Faster and said, let's go to the voters and ask if we can do this for these projects. And the Democrats say no. They want to raise taxes, raise fees.
Or toll.
And put money into their own pet projects.
Right, right. So
it's just frustrating.
It is frustrating, you know, and that was it. I mean, we had Democrats that in other committees that there were bills that said this has to go to a vote of the people. And they sit there and say, you know, we always want the people to have their say. And then here you've got a bill that will let the people have their say, and they kill it. So that's what's frustrating about it.
Well, you know, they won't go to the voters to ask for their permission on a tax increase. No. They'll just call it a fee
yeah.
and get around Tabor doing it that way.
Well, you know, the 228, Senate Bill 228 money, you know, that anything over the 6% was supposed to go into transportation, but because of the growth and everything, Tabor kicked in this time.
Yep.
And about $100 million is going to go into the HUTF fund or the
Highway Users Trust Fund.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Thank you for...
We had the same or similar conversation about hospital provider fee, and that was put in place before I got there. But it's a hospital provider what?
Fee.
And then the conversation and you know, people not really understanding what they're paying when they're in the hospital and have a bed, it's kind of a hidden fee. But
tax.
Then the conversation of enterprising that hospital provider fee and then putting revenue into the general fund, which is tax, and tax is not, it's just,
well,
wait a minute.
And it's actually turning the state into a business.
Yes.
That they can set their own rates and they can do whatever they want to and change the fees where they see fit and or the tax where they want to.
Right.
So it's frustrating.
It's interesting to watch the Democrats try to do this. And what's great with your bill is that you were saying what the projects were. And I believe the voters, when they know what the projects are and you tell them what you're planning on doing with it, they will oftentimes vote for that investment. But when you look at what the Democrats did and for the last two election cycles, where they had billion-dollar tax increases put on the ballot for education, and they just said, it's a Santa Claus list, we're going to spend it on whatever we want, the citizens of Colorado are not going to fall for that, and they will crush it. But in your thing, it wasn't a tax increase.
No, it was not.
It was not raising taxes.
No new taxes.
Whatsoever. And you were still going to them and saying, this is what we'd like to spend it on. Will
right.
you agree with this investment?
Right.
It's crazy. Well, guys, we're up to a break here. We're going to be back. This is Ted Harvey, Chris Holbert, and Randy Baumgartner talking about the legislative session that just finished on Wednesday. We hope you'll be back. We'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 303-477-5600. 303-477-5600. Thanks a bunch. We'll be right back. Colorado. This is Ted Harvey, former state senator from Douglas County. I'm on the air today with Chris Holbert, who is a current state senator from Douglas County, and Randy Baumgartner, who's a state senator from Northwest Colorado, talking about the legislative session that just ended. And we were just talking about the transportation bonding bill that Randy had brought forward that I believe is an incredible idea. I really didn't follow it that much, and now that I know more about it, I'm even more ticked off that the Democrats killed this bill. Especially, I'm in the finance. I have a finance background, and to see where interest rates are right now, and to know what an incredible opportunity it is to go out and bond and fund some of these important public projects, and
hey,
not and yeah and have a revenue stream that you know is going to be there, and not have to raise taxes and not be able to get that through this year when rates are where they are is just incredible missed opportunity, in my opinion, from the Democrats. But so we've talked about that. We've talked about a couple of other things. I want to talk about winners and losers in this last legislative session and stupid bills and couple other great bills that came through. I'll throw out right now, I think the biggest winner in this entire legislative session is Governor Hickenlooper. He didn't have to do anything. He could have gone on vacation for the last 5 months, and the state wouldn't have been any worse and wouldn't have been any better because he showed no leadership during the legislative process. If anything, hurt the state by not taking some leadership on some important bills like your bill. And then all the controversial bills that were passed out of the Senate, like repealing the mag ban bill, was killed in the House, and all of the kooky, crazy stuff that the House sent over was killed in the Senate, and Governor Hickenlooper didn't have to do anything. So now he can come back from his vacation and sign some bills, and he's loving life after the last election cycle. For the last 2 years, he's been in a situation where he's had some interesting bills put on his plate by the Democrat-controlled House and Senate, and he doesn't have to worry about that.
Well, and not only that, I mean, you know, there was a lot of decisions that he did have to make in the prior 2 years that most of the people in the state of Colorado, let's talk Nathan Dunlop for a second.
That's right.
You know, I mean, it was an either up or down, yes or no. Are we going to do this or not? Death or not?
And he punted.
And he punted. He said, I'm going to leave it to the next governor. Wait a minute. Who's the next governor? Oh, he is.
And he still hasn't done anything.
And he still hasn't done anything. And you're absolutely right, Ted, because for the past 2 years, he did have to make some really tough decisions. And, you know, he signed these gun bills into law, and then he stops and he says, well, not sure that I did the right thing, but maybe I'll do something different. So we offer the opportunity for him to do things and make not necessarily
my favorite example is when the Democrats passed the renewable energy mandate on rural Colorado and increased everybody's rural electricity bills through the roof,
right.
And he didn't do anything during that process to step in. Every single co-op across the state was coming into his office saying, this is terrible, you can't do this, and he said, well, I'm not going to do anything, let the Democrats figure it out in the legislature. And then it got to his desk and he signed it, and at the signing ceremony he said, this is terrible, I'm going to sign it though, and we'll do a committee tomorrow to try to fix it. Well, that's not how legislation's done. Once it's law and you sign it, Governor, it's law.
We were asked questions back then about signing statements. Well, does that have the force of law? I'm like, no. He had a signing statement
it's a letter to Santa Claus.
Yeah, Magpan and the 252 on.
And ask John Southers to come bail him out.
So, right.
I have regrets and remorse. One fascinating thing that I saw, and I'll give credit, props to State Representative Steve Lebsock up in North Denver, but he was one of the prime sponsors on the opt-out bill, hold harmless for parents and students and teachers and districts if parents opt their kids out of the annual assessments. And Representative Lebsock,
the burdensome testing,
yes,
of students,
yes. And Representative Lebsock took the prime co-sponsor in the House with my replacement, Representative Kim Ransom, and kudos to Kim. She had a great year, and she's going to have great cut scores and POL scores, and she really kept her focus on how she voted. But it was so fun to watch Steve, the Representative Lebsock, just calling out the governor, because during the time the opt-out bill came out of the Senate, huge support. I don't remember the vote. It was over 30 yes votes. I think it was something like
there's 30, only 35 senators.
Yeah, I think it was 32-3 or something like that. But I mean, real strong support. Majority leader, minority leader, all the. You know, prominent folks on education. Then it goes over and it sits in the House, and the House committee had it scheduled, then they pulled it off the calendar and bumped it, and it looked like they were trying to shove it toward the end of the session so we wouldn't be there if he vetoed it to overturn him, because we passed it through with more than a two-thirds majority in the Senate. Maybe it was high 20s. It's all kind of a blur, but Lebsock was calling out the governor, you know, and
what
know,
was he saying?
Well, you know, are you going to veto this bill? You know, what
give some leadership here. Show some leadership here. And, we need some direction. The Democrats need some direction.
It was amazing to watch the Twitter feed and everything. Just see how willing Representative Lebsock was, to push for his bill and to pound on the governor.
That's awesome.
You know, good for him. You know, wow.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening, we'd love to hear from you. The phone number is 303-477-5600. If you'd like to talk about any of these issues, please give us a call. One other thing that just jumped into my head, that the governor is actually going to have to make a decision on something. I know it's hard to believe, but he has two red light camera bills on his desk. One that outlaws red light cameras in the state of Colorado, and then the other one that puts it to a vote of the people for the municipalities to be able to implement that. What a great idea as a compromise to say, let the citizens decide if they want to have this burdensome you infringement on their rights placed upon them in their cities. And what's the governor going to do, you guys? Yeah. It came out of a Republican Senate and a Democrat House, two bills that are on his desk, two options, governor. What are you going to do? I'll put money on it. The former mayor of Denver, where Denver was making $8 million a year funding their budget off of red light cameras, I guarantee you the former mayor of Denver is going to veto both those bills.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think you're probably right, too. But it is a great idea. I mean, you know, they always talk about we're for local control. We're for well, let's see if
unless we're not.
Unless we're not today. That's a fact. That is a fact.
I mean, you're on the Transportation Committee. Did you hear about those bills? In transportation or to go to judiciary?
Went to business, labor, and technology.
I got
really?
To hear. Yeah.
Did you
and,
really?
And Chairman Ballmer had one of those, and I believe he had, yeah. It
had the one. I don't know where the other one went.
Yeah, and I think between that and urban renewal and TIF, Senator Ballmer worked on that too. I think he had some folks in the municipal areas that were feeling a little bit uncomfortable, so it was interesting to watch that, and he made the same point that you did, Senator Harvey, and how could anybody be against letting the voters weigh in and say, yes, we want these in our communities, or no, we don't. But I think you're right. I think the governor's probably got those two on his radar.
I mean, not many bills came out of both chambers with the kind of support that those bills did.
Right. To your point earlier, I mean, we did kill a lot of stuff that he might not want on his desk that
right.
went too far left, and the House killed stuff that he wouldn't want on his desk that he went too far right.
These are incredibly popular
but these two
bills.
That's right. So, but for those who, on different legislation have suggested, you know, let's put this on the governor's desk and hold him accountable for his vote. He's term limited. So I know his name was out there in the past as maybe a
good
presidential or a vice presidential candidate, and I don't know if that's out there now, but it seems like maybe he's looking at the end of his
political
term
career.
At least his term as governor, and I don't know if he would lose sleep over vetoing those two bills or not. It'll be interesting
great.
To watch.
I think it's great. Again, you guys, this is Ted Harvey and Chris Hulbert, Randy Bumgardner. If you would like to join in on the conversation, the phone number is 303-477-5600. Randy, what's another bill that you thought was one of the ugly bills that came through the legislature this year?
Well, I don't know if it's ugly or not. We had this one bill that actually they came to me and wanted me to be the prime sponsor of, and it was called ladder safety.
Ladder.
Climb up the ladder.
Like climb up the ladder safety. And they said, you know, once you read this, you're going to know exactly that it's probably one of the best bills of the session. And it took me about 2 seconds to say, this is one of the dumbest bills I think I've ever read.
There are no stickers on ladders already.
But it explained what a ladder was. You know, you got the two vertical and you got the horizontal pieces. And, you know, but basically what it was it said that if you use a ladder on uneven ground or something elevated, you need to secure it to a building or the structure.
Or else
the employer, if he didn't tell you as the employee that you needed to secure that,
this is where our state has gone. Or the country has gone.
Now, who would benefit from such a bill?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. Who would?
Insurance companies? Lawyers?
Lawyers, the employee. Yeah. But luckily, that thing was, I believe it was postponed indefinitely.
As in killed.
Killed.
All right. We've got to take a break real quick. Again, you guys, if you want to call in and talk about these crazy bills, the phone number is 303-477-5600. We'll be right back with Ted and Chris and Randy. Good afternoon, everybody. This is Ted Harvey, not Ken Clark, on Freedom 560. Former state senator from Douglas County here with the current state senator from Douglas County, Chris Hulbert, or one of the senators from Douglas County, Chris Hulbert, and Randy Bumgardner, who's a senator from northwestern Colorado. And we're talking about the legislative session that just wrapped up on Wednesday, and some interesting bills that went through and interesting personalities that went through. One of the things I wanted to throw out there as I was reading a headline earlier this week was that the former president of the Senate and current minority leader in the Senate. I'd love to hear that. Morgan Carroll is thinking about running for Congress against Mike Kaufman, who won overwhelmingly in the last election. What do you guys think of Morgan Carroll running for Congress?
Well, I've watched Senator Carroll come through the legislature. I think she's been there 10, 11 years. And I remember when she came in the House, a vivid memory of her just being determined to follow a line of questioning in a committee. And I think the current Democrat whip at the time was Angie Pacioni. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the whip was uncomfortable with the line of questioning or you know what Representative Carroll was on at that time, and Morgan, Senator Carroll now, just blew right by it. She's just unafraid to go do what she wants to do. I think sometimes, maybe all of us, you know, we get our teeth locked into something and we don't want to give up. But that's one thing I appreciate about her. Obviously, policies, we disagree on lots of things, but she's a lion.
She's brilliant, too. And she used to be a pretty strong libertarian on gun issues. She was with us on gun issues, on seatbelt laws and helmet laws. She was with us on those things. And I think she has seen the golden ring of liberal ideology in getting her to where she wants to be, and she's suddenly become this liberal. And that's not going to win against Mike Kaufman. Mike Kaufman will tear her up, I think. Yeah. We've got a couple people on the line real quick. Let's go to Rob. He's got a comment. Rob, thanks for calling in on this dreary day. What's going on with you, and what are you thinking?
Not much. I was just going to ask about the ban on the rain barrels.
We do have bans on rain barrels in Colorado. Couldn't we be saving some water this week with those things? Where do you live?
I live out in Strasburg.
So, do you think you could utilize some rain barrels out there?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So, that's one of my areas that I know a little bit about water law.
Let me give former Senator Harvey some credit. He's run. He's paid attention. Knows water law, but rooftop. What was the name of the water bill that you did?
Rainwater harvesting is what it's called.
Very much the same topic. So.
Yeah. It is weird the way Colorado water law works is that every drop of water that falls in Colorado is owned by somebody. And so the farmers who have the water right, own the water right for that water that's going down the river, they own that. And anytime somebody takes water out of the river that is not theirs and they didn't pay for, no matter how they take it out, whether it's out of their gutter into a rain barrel, that's owned by somebody. And Colorado's unique to that. Everybody says no other state in the country prohibits people from collecting rainwater. Well, nobody in the country has privatized their water rights the way Colorado has. So it's an interesting dilemma. I carried the bill, the rainwater harvesting bill, before to say that in areas that are rural, and you are able to prove that collecting water and putting it into cisterns is not going to hurt the downstream water users, you can do that. But we can't get the votes to do it on buckets under rain spouts. It's crazy to me. And I know, you know, as you all know, especially out in Strasburg, if we've had some serious droughts. And yes. If we had some people that were able to utilize the rain coming out of their gutters rather than watering their yards with municipal water use or the farmers having to continue to rely on us sending them water from the municipalities out there, I think it would be good. But it was interesting to follow that debate. And Senator Sonnenberg did a very good job of representing his constituents downstream.
Yes, yep. He did.
Well, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. I wish we could get in more in depth. That is a very technical, legal arena, and we'll see if what Jerry's going to do next time. Now, we do have another caller on the line. His name is Greg from Bailey. Greg, thanks for calling in. What's going on with you, and what's the weather like up there? It looks like you guys are socked in.
We're getting some water. I I got a couple buckets saved up here. Yeah.
Don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody.
15 buckets or 30 buckets?
You can grow marijuana, but you can't have a bucket full of rainwater.
Oh, no. You know, your whole conversation today, you said that the very technical arena that last bill you outlined and covered, but, you know, also meaningless. But, you know, exactly. That never goes said enough. That can't be said enough. Anyway, I remember when Bill Owens first came into office after Romer left, and he started talking seriously about developing a new corridor up where the 285 corridor is, and starting with, he called them existing easements, buying very few easements, starting down at Sedalia, even off of I-25 and Castle Rock, getting all the southern population area of Denver to more easily enter the Summit County area from another corridor.
So you're not talking about expanding 285. You're talking about a different corridor.
Well, no, they're talking about expanding. They were talking about expanding 285 too, also. Hmm. And I wonder if you guys ever hear of anything like that. I mean, we've got a lot of real problems that are just continuing because they don't get solved.
Well, it seems like an idea, Randy, that you know, you'd be our expert on, but would the transportation bonds is that something we could look at as a project?
Well, it's very possible. We could look at that as a project. CDOT and the Highway Commission, they come up with a list of projects that they feel through meetings and all over the state that they felt like was the priority projects. But I don't know if that was one of the priority projects or not. But that's possible.
I'm wondering why. I don't even care about that bill anymore. I don't even care about Colorado.
Okay.
Tell you the truth, I don't care about Colorado's problems that much, but I don't listen to as much music as I should. The only thing is I'm getting frustrated. I'm getting a little older. I'm just seeing basically what I will just probably pretty safely assume is capitulation to environmental interests and people just not caring, people engaging in arguments among themselves, among their own party, a lot of infighting, a lot of wasted time, a lot of, you know, bills that I don't know what bills and I don't know why bills and where they go bills type discussion that you've been having today, and the real problems just languishing. And I'm gonna tell you, I'm kind of withdrawing from interest about, you know, and it's sad. It's my civic responsibility to try to at least vote right, stay informed. But, you know, another project.
Greg, if I could interrupt, I think you're talking at least to two guys that are a little bit disconnected and frustrated with it and tired of
I think we're all getting a little cynical
after
in this
120
process.
Days in the sausage factory, we feel your pain. But, I so appreciate Ken and Chris and Randy here on KLZ because, you know, it is a source of inspiration, I think, for those of us who share your opinions. I mean, not everybody's going to agree with everything that's said here on KLZ, but it's a reassurance to be able to connect with people who have similar views and try to organize and figure out how we move forward and get back to the Constitution, make government less part of our lives.
Well, I agree, and you know, it's like watching sausage being made down at the legislature. It's not pretty to watch, but in the end, normally the stuff that gets through is pretty good stuff and good for Colorado when the Republicans are in charge. You look at what happened when you have a full control with the Democrats in charge, and you get nannyism at its best. And the gun ban bills were a prime example of that. The renewable energy bill was a prime example of that. And I think if we had the adults in charge in both chambers and got a Republican governor, we'd have a much better situation for Colorado and certainly better for freedom and liberty. But Greg, thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. One of the things that I want to talk about, guys, when we come back is the presidential primary bill that we had dropped on the legislature at the very last 5 days. One of the most controversial bills and pretty complicated bill to be presented to the legislature this year, and it was dropped in the last 5 years, five days, and we had that bill killed and looked bad for Republicans in the last couple days. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Again, this is Ted Harvey, Chris Holbert, and Randy Baumgartner on KLZ 560.
Freedom.